Good luck with that, bitch.
I bought a throw blanket, and it's, like, at my desk. Like, I have a throw at my desk.
To sit on?
No, to cover my body with at work.
Are you cold at work?
Yeah. The air conditioner is fucking freezing.
You know what's really funny? Like, in the summertime, it's always cold in the office.
Mm-hmm.
But then, in the wintertime, it's nice because they have the heaters on. So you're not really freezing.
I don't think they really turn the heaters on. They just turn the air off. I don't think they turn...
Well, you guys don't need to be warm, but you're not going to be cold.
Okay, exactly. You're not going to freeze, but here you go. Have a nice day.
That's funny.
Okay. Should I blow my nose before this? How do I sound? Do I sound okay? Or do I sound
you
nasal?
Sound slightly nasally. You don't sound as bad as before, but
yeah.
You sound slightly nasally. Did you, like, wipe us not a booger on your
No,
face?
It's fucking mimosa.
Orange pulp.
What's that on your face?
That orange juice has pulp in it.
What's that on your face?
Like,
a
that?
Booger?
I'm blind, it's a lonely teardrop.
Oh,
that's really cute.
Man, that movie was crazy. I think that's, like, the first movie I really remember watching.
Crybaby?
Not, like, really remember watching, but, like, as a adolescent. I don't know. Just, like, watching over and over and over again.
You know what's really funny? Well, we used to live on Fairwood. I remember one time, it was fifth grade. Maybe it was sixth grade. Jessica. You know Jessica. She came over, and we had a sleepover. And we were watching. We watched that movie. I think we watched that movie, like, three times that night.
Crybaby?
Yeah. And I used to have these dresses. And so, like, we put these dresses on. And, like, we slept in the living room on the floor.
Uh-huh.
And we were, you know, just watching Crybaby or something. And, like, she was obsessed with Luke Perry at the time. Because that was, like, 90210.
Okay.
You know. And so she said that she had a dream that Luke Perry was in her dream, and, like, me and Johnny Depp were in her dream, and we were a couple, and we're, like, 11 years old.
That's the dream.
And I just remember that. I think that is so funny, like, the shit you remember, like, from when you were a little kid.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I remember that movie vividly, just watching it over and over and over again.
I have it on DVD right now.
Of course. Of course. I own Crybaby.
I do.
That's cool, dude. All right, I have a slight headache. I could probably take the Tylenol, but we're going to power through this. And how was your week, Brandy?
I don't know. I don't know what happened this week.
How do you not know what happened in your week?
Because, okay, I remember I took Jelani to school. Gracie was sick on Thursday and Friday, so she didn't go to school.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's all you remember.
That's all I remember.
Did anything exciting happen this week? I saw you read an article.
Oh, yeah. My problem is, like, I have like, a bunch of websites. I do. I have a bunch of websites that I had, you know, I bought the domain names for, and I built. They're on WordPress. I'm paying for these websites.
Okay.
I'm paying for domains. I'm paying for WordPress hosting.
How much is WordPress hosting?
Depends on when you sign up. Because, like, I always sign up when there's, like, a coupon code for, like, 50% off.
$5.
Or, like, you get a free domain when you sign up. And,
I need,
you know,
one of them.
I always do that. But, so I have all of these. I have, like, literally I have, like, 12 domain names.
Uh-huh.
And then I have, like, 5 websites.
You're a savage.
And I work on them, and then I let them sit. And then I work on it. Like, I'll work on it, like for a week, I'll be like, I'm on this.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, the rest of the year, nothing. And so I'm like, I need to get better about working on my websites, because these are potentially income, you know, they're potentially revenue. I just need to fucking, like, work on it. And that's my problem. I, like, get so scatterbrained. I'm like, I need to do this. I need to do this. This website. And then I have to do this and this and this and this. And I'm like, okay, what's happening? Like, I could be, like, literally, I could be like Steve Jobs right now, but I don't fucking, like, I need to buckle down and work on my shit.
Yeah.
So that's what I did last week. I was like, okay, I have this one. I need to post on here. And then I'm like, and then I get in my head, because I'm a writer, and I'm like, this is crap. Nobody's going to like it.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be nobody, you know, people are going to talk shit. And so I'm like, all right. And then it just, like, foils itself, and it becomes this cycle of where I'm like, okay,
so
I want to work on it, but I don't want to work on it because it's going to be garbage.
Can I tell you something that's my fatal flaw and also, like, such a benefit that I have? is like, I'll write some shit up and I don't fucking care. I'll just post it. And I'm like, oh, error. But like the general idea is there, but then I just don't like, I don't double check. Like I'm very impulsive. So I'll like, you know, I'll just think about something and I'll write it and I may like double check it, but only like 75% of me checking. Cause I'm like, okay, whatever. You speak English, you know how to write. But then I'll just post it, and I'm just like, oh, there's an error in this. I have to fix it.
Yeah, I'm like, this is crap. What the fuck are you talking about?
I think everybody
loves it.
You're
going to get trashed. Just fucking leave it. And then, like, so then I do this thing. It's this thing. It's the same thing with the books. It's the same thing. So that's why, actually, this week I started working on the final book for the withdrawal series.
Oh, shut up!
So
nice.
My goal is to have that done by my birthday.
Ooh, okay. Can we talk about? Okay, so just what is the withdrawal series, and where can we find it?
I'm like, why are you doing this?
Just
right?
Because there's
okay,
hi.
So,
if there's new
well,
listeners, hello. I know this is us just bantering right now, but hello, how you doing?
Okay, so the withdrawal series is, it was going to be 5 books, but it's just going to be fucking 3 because that's how.
Nobody had time for that.
So, the first book is Smuggled Love, Obsession and Addiction. And then the second one is Deception and Betrayal. But what is the title?
It's on the website.
Yeah.
Both books are on the website.
It's on the website.
So these are all novellas.
But I can't even remember the name of my own books.
It's okay. You're a G. These are books that Brandy has written.
I'm no Stephen King.
They're novellas. They're very quick reads. And I think they're like $2 or $3 on Amazon. And I do have links.
They're like $4.
$4, excuse me. You can afford it. Knock it off. Support an artist. Support a writer. Support Brandy.
I think the print, like the physical book, is like $6.99.
Okay. Amazon's what's up.
The Kindle version is like $2, $3.99.
So it's on Kindle and you can get it in print if you have to have that paper in your hand. And get that paper in your hand, baby. Get
yeah.
it in your hand.
I think we should give away the signed, the first the first book, the Smuggled Love. I think what I'll do is I'll sign one. Like,
I have one.
If somebody wants to become a patron, I'll send them a signed copy.
Ooh.
At the $5 level.
At the $5
level. What is that, the mimosa
that
tier?
That is the bottomless mimosa tier. And guess what? We're having mimosas today. And guess what? They're bottomless until the bottle is empty. And I got the big fucking bottle. The liter and a half from Sam's Club.
Of champagne.
Yes, because that's awesome. That's a great promotion, Brandy. So you'll get a free book from Brandy that she
signed
that she
personalized
has written.
With a little message
that
in
is
it
a published novel, a novella.
Yeah.
It'll be signed by the author, and we will send that to our Bottomless Mimosa patron. Now that's $5.
The very first one. So...
The
first
very
person,
first one,
yeah.
So that's
we have limited copies.
Yes, we do.
You have to buy
and
on.
Guess what?
Unless you want to send it, you can send it to us, and I'll sign it for you, and then you can send it back.
Or we can give it to you. I have. I mean, I don't want to give them mine, but I do have a signed copy.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I have yours. Duh. But check that out. Anyway, so that was your week. So you're learning to get focused.
It's not even about that. It's just about letting go of, like, my... It's, like, it's not necessarily an ego thing. It's more like a fear of criticism.
Dude, I don't care.
Even though, like, I really don't give a shit about how people, like, what people say. But, like, I'm like, this is my work. This
yeah.
is my shit. Like, this is out there.
What did
forever.
Erica say? What did Erica Badu say? This is my shit and I take it seriously or something like that. Like, in the beginning of a song. She's like, this is my shit, and I take it seriously or something. I'm sensitive about my shit. Something
yeah,
like that.
You know? That's like, why, like, you'll find, like, people, instead of taking, like, criticism, they get all pissed off and they start, like, bashing their like, fans and stuff. I'm not that type
like
of person.
Like, Chris Brown, he's a psycho. Like, he hates on his, like...
Yeah,
he,
yeah.
He, like, hates on his freaking fandom. Like, don't hate on your fucking fans, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Don't talk shit. It's just not cool.
Yeah, and it's because they can't take... Like, if your fans don't like something that you put out, instead of taking it as, okay, I see where they're coming from, or maybe,
yeah.
you know, maybe I wasn't on my game, or whatever.
Yeah.
They get defensive and they start talking shit.
Calm the fuck down and let's not talk shit.
And rather than doing all that, I'm just like, I'm just not going to put out anything.
I'll just give you nothing.
Exactly. All right. And that's my issue. I'm like, I'm going to go crawl in my little hidey hole and not fucking come out because I'm scared.
You're going to be okay. So you'll be a survivor. So, okay, that's good. So,
it's a writing issue. It's an artist's issue.
It's definitely a tortured artist thing.
A creator's problem or whatever.
I don't think I don't have that spirit in me. I'm more like the entrepreneurial spirit. Just like put it out there and let's see what happens. And oh well, if I fail, I'll get back up.
Yeah, it's not a failure. It's
not even a failure. I don't think you're a failure. I think you're fucking amazing, dude. I think you're a great writer.
Criticism.
I have like so much like hype for you and love for you and just like belief
the hype
in your art. I'm your fucking
hype man.
I'm your fucking hype man, yo.
Brandy's on the mic. Brandy's on the mic. Brandy. Yeah.
I'm not a rapper.
I don't do rap.
If you were a rapper, I'd be like, yo, here she come, Brandy.
Brandy.
Okay.
You don't want to hear me rap?
No.
Fricka, Brandy. Yeah. So, how was my week? Oh, thanks for asking.
How was your week, Sunny?
How was your week? I was hacking up lots of loogies this week.
Yeah.
It's gross, but I've been taking Sudafed, so I've learned that I can only take Sudafed once a day.
You're a tweaker.
I'm a fucking tweaker. Because, I was doing Sudafed twice a day, and I was...
Doesn't it say take it, twice a day?
It's 12 hours, yeah. It says just don't take more than two a day. But I was taking one, at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And then the one at night had me up at night like a fucking zombie. I was up, every 2 hours, and I wasn't sleeping.
And my 2 hours? Did you fall asleep for 2 hours and then wake up?
Yep. And then I was up every hour, every 2 hours. My sleep pattern was fucked up for 2 days. Yeah. And I was like, it's this fucking Sudafed. I stopped taking that shit at night, and I slept like a fucking baby. Ew. So that I was saying, that's why they make crack out of that, I guess.
Maybe I should take some Sudafed so I can stay up all night and, work.
Dude, no.
Wait.
I've been taking it once a day, and I feel so much better, and it's just getting the mucus out. My body feels good. I don't have any sore throat, nothing. It's just, every now and then I get, a buildup in my nasal passage or whatever. So once I clear it out, I'm good. So I think I just need to do that really quick. And
get the snot out.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm good. So I don't know. Maybe it is allergies.
Sinus infection. That Sudafed is for sinuses, so.
Well, it's a sinus thing, but remember when I went to the doctor, they said it was an upper respiratory viral infection or something like that.
Oh, is that what he said? He said viral. I didn't hear him say upper respiratory.
I read it on the doctor's note. It said upper respiratory viral infection.
Okay.
And so it's just okay, so you guys aren't going to give me drugs for this? All right, fine. Whatever.
Well, because prescription Sudafed is just ephedrine. It's just ephedrine.
Let me just get on my fucking high horse right now and bitch about something real quick. So I have the flexible spending with my work. They take
the flex spend
for medical for and guess what? I can buy any fucking thing I want to buy as long as it's medical. It could be Tylenol, it can be Band-Aids, it can be whatever the fuck. I don't fucking care.
Uh-huh.
So the doctor tells me to go to the store and buy some fucking Sudafed. You were there. He said, buy some Sudafed over the counter. I go ahead and turn in my receipt for that Sudafed, and they denied my claim.
Why?
Exactly. They were like, oh, you need to have a prescription from your doctor. And I said, no, the fuck I don't. And so,
was this in person or was this,
this
via
is,
email?
This is all digital. This is all digital.
Okay.
And I was, hot for, 10 minutes. And it's stupid. It was, $16. No big deal. But I don't
know.
It's my
why
money.
Was it why was it $16?
It was stupid. I don't know. Maybe because you can make crack from it. I don't fucking know. But on the doctor's notes, it clearly says, purchase Sudafed and take as needed. I fucking highlighted that shit, scanned it, and sent it back to those motherfuckers. Eat a dick. This is what it fucking says. I don't need a fucking doctor's note for that. It could be any fucking thing. I bought it from fucking Rite Aid. I had to buy it over the counter. This is a medical thing. Give me my fucking money that I've put into this.
Right.
Give me my money. It's my money.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Dude, they do anything they can to not give you
money. It's my money.
Yeah.
Anyway.
This is an insurance company. You can fucking get in a car accident, bash your head, freaking have stitches from your freaking big toe all the way up to the top of your freaking skull, and they'll be like, oh, your claim is denied. No, you don't fucking deny my medical claim that is now going to cost me $3 million because the asshole that was driving over here didn't have insurance, so now you have to pay for my shit. And even if I sue this asshole, I'm not going to get any fucking money because he doesn't have insurance.
Yeah.
You pay for my shit and fucking your insurance company will be like, no.
Do your fucking job.
No.
Your job is to insure me.
Your blinker was out, so you don't get any money.
Eat a dick!
Yeah. Insurance company
eat a
sucks.
Fucking
that's
dick.
That's the same shit with those fucking...
Eat a dick!
These assholes that are like, oh, we protect you. You don't protect
no, you
shit.
Don't. No, you don't.
You
protect
your bottom fucking leg. Exactly.
Anyway... so that was my week. I'm feeling much better. I just gotta get the last of this mucus out of my body. But I'm feeling much better. I'm like at 90%. So we're old, it takes forever for us to heal, and that's just where we are in our lives, or me at least.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying? So hey, I'm Sunny Hepburn.
And I'm Brandy Flakes.
And this is
Book
of
Lies.
The podcast.
Yeah, man.
So yeah, man.
So, Sunny, who are we talking about today?
Okay, so we have a story from over the pond. Is that what they call it?
Across the pond.
Across the pond, when you're in the UK. This is the story of the Bolton Art Forgers, or also the story of Sean Greenalge. And it's spelled Greenalgh, but I think it's Greenalge.
Again, the pronunciations like Welsh words and Irish words and Scottish words are weird. So.
Yeah, so it's Greenalge. Sean Greenalge from Bromley Cross, Lancashire, England. My ears plugged up all the fucking sudden. So that is who we're covering today. So we're going to go ahead and talk about the story of the Bolton Art Forger. And let me just give you my sources right now because I'm not going to talk about it again. So, I got this information from...
Your mama.
Mm-hmm. She called me up and she was like, yo. No, I got this from YouTube, from Crime Watch on YouTube, how they call it the Bolton Art Forger, from Wikipedia, and then also from TheGuardian.com. And, I didn't get the writer's fucking name, son of a bitch. Don't be mad at me, bro. Don't at me, yo. I'll give you your dude.
Don't tase me, bro.
That's who we're talking about. I guess we don't have any housekeeping. Before I go into this story, everything's good.
Cool.
Let's go. Sorry, I have a softball game today. I feel like I should feel... I just want to drink this mimosa, and then I don't know.
Yeah.
This is going to be tough.
All right. Yeah, you're going to be playing softball on mimosas. Like, that's not a good combo.
Dude, people be in the dugout drinking beers, yo.
Oh, my God. Okay, anyway, go ahead.
That's the adult co-ed league. Okay, so this is the story of Sean Greenalge, the Bolton Art Forger, born in 1960 in Bromley Cross, Lancashire, England, to his parents, George and Olive. I just want to give you their ages really quick. George was born in 1923.
Olive.
And Olive was born in 1925. And Sean is the youngest of five boys and two girls. So, Sean...
There's fucking seven kids?
The youngest of five boys and two
God.
Girls.
Oh, my God. Jesus. Okay.
And
ahead.
He's number seven. He's the baby boy. Let's call him baby boy. So, baby boy...
Oh, God.
Was brought up in... England, he was considered an anomaly, even as a young child, because of his skill set. He could draw very well. He could draw like he was a freaking adult as a kid, like as like a 7-year-old, 6-year-old. His
really?
Dad used to draw birds, but that's about it. His dad used to draw birds, and like his mother's father was like a I'm going to go into him as well. Let's just talk about the story, and then I'll tell you a little bit more. But he used to work as a... not work as... He used to buy a lot of art. He used to visit a lot of auction houses and stuff like that. But this kid was very talented at a young age. At age 13, he was already earning a substantial living selling reproduction pots and lids and miniature clay pipe busts fired at his school kennel.
So he can sculpt too.
He can do it all.
Okay.
He can do it all. At school camp, he sold these fucking reproductions at local junkyard shops and fairs, and he pretended that he dug them up as disused Victorian tips.
I don't even know what the fuck that's supposed to mean.
I don't know either. Like, he was like, oh, you know, these were Victorian artifacts. Here, check these out. I dug them up. Look at these clay pots. Look at these lids. They're super rare. Check them out. So he's selling them at fairs and junk, like, you know, secondhand shops and, you know, what have you. So at 13.
I dug them up.
Yeah.
You don't dig up a pot. If you're digging up a
lids.
Pot, it's broken.
He's seeing the lids.
It's broken, too.
Well, what's left of the lids? He was obviously a, what was Ross Geller? A paleontologist. So he was able to go in there and dig it up and dust
okay.
it and find very nice pieces of work.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Shut up. Okay. It's fucking 1973. They want what they want. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So at a young age, his family went on a trip to Rome where he spent hours gazing at the frescoes of Botticelli.
Mm-hmm.
Perugino, and then Signorelli. And in particular, Raphael Stanzas. And that triggered him in both of a sense of inadequacy and a realization of what could be actually achieved.
Okay, so he felt like, oh, I'm not as good as these guys, I can be.
Yes,
all
he
right,
says,
right.
I felt so insignificant. And his passion was kindled. So, like, shortly after his family trip, he's at the age of 16. So, he probably went on this trip, like, 15, 16. At the age of 16, he dropped out of high school in 1976. And he was considered a self-taught artist. So, when he dropped out of school, he entered a few paintings under his own name into an art exhibit held at the Bolton's Octagon Theater. So, this is, the area that he lives in. It's called Bolton. And the former mayor of Bolton, Charles Lucas, who is an art collector, bought one of his watercolors for $20.
Okay.
Or in the UK, whatever you want to call it, 20...
It's like 18.9.
It's just, it's...
Anyway, go ahead.
20 euros, what is that?
That's 20 euros.
20 euros. He bought it for 20
That's
euros.
Pounds.
Pounds?
20 euros, that's pounds.
Scoozy, 20 pounds. So, shortly after the sale, and then, like... Grealish was like, okay, Sean was like, okay, $20, I really can't, live off of this, but, you know, whatever. But shortly after the sale, Lucas got in touch with Grealish again, the mayor who bought his $20 piece of work. He offered Grealish £400 to create copies of some of his John Ruskin paintings that he owned.
So he could hang them and then, put the real ones in storage or something?
Fucking exactly right.
Yeah.
So, okay. He needed to put the originals into safekeeping.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But he wanted reproductions to be hung on the wall.
Gotcha.
Perfect fit. He was, his natural style of painting was Ruskin, Turner-esque, luminous. And apparently you could hardly tell the difference between the originals and the ones that he had created.
Good.
So, he's good at making some fake shit.
Right.
He got £400 for this.
Yeah, I'd take it. Fuck it.
Fuck it. Cry two pennies in a bucket. Fuck it. So, he's super pumped about the $400 he made from the reproduction of the pictures. Then he decided to try his luck with a real forgery. So, he drew 6 sketches in the style of Degas, D-E-G-A-S.
Degas.
He signed it as the artist. He even put a fake fucking antler stamp on the back of the photo.
Oh.
Which was found on real works of art.
Uh-huh.
So he was like, okay. And he's very educated to, the art world because obviously he's been traveling. He's got family who's been in the art industry, so he knows what to fucking look for.
Right.
So he takes a picture of the sketch, writes a letter to Christie's in London, and they ask him to bring it in to inspect the work.
No, okay.
So he gets to fucking Christie's, and he's like, okay. Oh, shit. I'm at Christie's. Okay, so if this shit doesn't go right, how the fuck do I get out?
Uh-huh.
So he's making an escape plan.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, you need one. But
you need to have a fucking escape plan if you're trying to fucking sell a forgery.
Right.
So he gets there and fucking Christie's bought it. They were like, oh, this is legit. We love it.
Wait. Did they have an art appraiser look at it, or was it just
it's
some asshole
Christie's.
From Christie's?
They're experts.
No,
it's Christie's.
No. Okay. You can be a buyer, but you need an appraiser to fucking appraise that shit and be like, this is real or this is not.
Well, Christie's bought it.
Okay.
He fooled their fucking art appraisers or their art critics and they bought it.
A critic is not an appraiser.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't know.
All right,
it doesn't
matter. Go ahead.
They bought it and sold it for auction for $10,000. $10,000. Okay. So,
and how much was he going to make?
£10,000. I guess he earned, maybe they got a commission, maybe they got a percentage.
Yeah, they don't, he doesn't get 100% of it, so.
Well, he's
like 10, I think they get like 10%.
Well, I'll take 10% of $10,000.
Thank
you. So, he fucking fooled London art experts, and he was 17 years old.
Oh, okay. So he's still a teenager.
He's a baby.
All right.
So, obviously, guys, this guy is a forger. He's a liar. But when I was doing this story and I first, like, looked into the story, I was like, this fucking guy, how dare you? But then I, like, looked into his story and I'm just like, I don't know. I'm like, I'm on the fence. I feel like this could be a really good movie. Just saying.
Maybe it will be.
Maybe it will be. So,
hey, maybe I'll write the screenplay. I don't write screenplays, but whatever.
Why not? Let's do that fucking shit. Can I bring in the comedic, No, I'm not funny.
What are you talking about?
I want to be the writer. I want to help. I want to be...
I want to help.
What's that called when you just get in ideas from me? A sort? No. Anyway, we'll figure it out.
Muse?
I want to be a muse. You just get insights from me. You just ask me questions. So he sold the fucking shit.
It's a source.
Yeah. Yeah, he sold the fucking shit, and he made... Well, he sold it for $10,000.
Okay.
He felt a tiny bit guilty. A tiny bit guilty about what he had done. And he was like, that's his mom's side of the family. That's got him all, you know, like, guilty.
With a conscience and shit?
Exactly.
So the conscience is on his mom's side.
Yeah.
And the swindlers are on his dad's side?
I don't know. We'll figure this out. He felt a tiny bit guilty. He really didn't do anything with the money. He ended up going to, like, a library and reading up on, like, art history.
Mm.
And while he's at this library, he meets a girl.
Mm.
Named Janie.
Oh.
And I was like, here's the love story part.
Is there?
So he met Jenny. Jenny was like a, she was a college student. She was like a assistant or whatever.
Assistant to what?
I think she, I don't know, at the fucking library. I don't fucking know. Library assistant. So he took the fucking money that he got from his first official forgery and traveled with Janie. Like, they became, like, fast friends, and they had a little romance, and he said this was the best year of his life.
Aw, that's sweet.
And so they traveled. They went to Florence, they went to San Lorenzo, they went to Chiara, stopping at the house where Donatello is said to have chosen the stone for his sculptures.
Mm.
So he's soaking up a lot of culture, he's soaking up a lot of art, and he's just, you know, basking in all this excellence of
mm-hmm.
his artwork.
Right.
But soon after they returned home, Janie began to have fits, and she was diagnosed with the inoperable brain tumor.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, an inoperable brain tumor, and a few months later, she died.
Well, you know what's funny? When was this? What year?
This is 19... He's 17, so this is 1977, 78.
They said,
Norman.
Yeah, they said his was inoperable, but
yeah.
they got that shit out of there.
Yeah.
So, all right, anyway, go ahead.
So she died, and he's talking to the writer of the story for The Guardian, and he says, like, he's absolutely sure that if she lived, he would have taken a different path.
She was his voice of reason?
I think so, like, you know, his right side, just like, you know, use your work for this and do it for that rather than what you're going to end up doing it for.
Mm-hmm.
So she died, and he's fucking depressed for, like, 2 years. He spent the remainder of his money traveling to places where he and Janie wanted to go.
Oh, okay.
He's depressed, but you know that they dreamt of visiting together. Egypt,
Greece.
Spain. He went on no fewer than 7 trips to Rome. He took a job working for an antique restorer.
Okay.
After this. And so the restorer gave Greenhalgh a key to the yard that allowed him to work on personal projects on the weekends. He cobbled... quadrangle. They're on the I don't fucking know what that
is. Yeah, that's like a British word or something.
All these words are British, guys. He carved limestone Egyptian scribes. He visited Greenhalgh made some pieces that while he was working for the art dealer. The art dealer allowed him to use the place. He's carving things up forever. One piece of work that he had done, the art dealer was like, okay, I'll buy that for £200.
Cool.
British pounds.
All right.
He's like, okay, sure, I'll sell it. Sure, I mean, I'll take it, no problem.
Yeah.
And And it was, so it was a piece that he did was, like, similar to some Egyptian work that was done, like, in Egypt or something that he had seen.
All right.
So this guy sees work and recreates it.
Yeah.
That's his thing. And one thing I'll tell you in case I forget to mention it, at the end of the day, he doesn't have his own voice. He doesn't have his own piece of work. And that's one of his complaints now, like, today.
Yeah, he never created anything that was his
own.
Right.
And he says, I have nothing that's my own. Everything is an inspiration from someone else.
Right.
Which is his problem.
Yeah.
So he does this piece. The guy buys it $200 on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
2 years later, Greenhalgh discovered that the dealer had ended up selling that fucking piece of work as an original. So he upsold it, sold it as a fucking original. Said, hey, this is an original piece. Give me $10,000 for it.
Oh, God. Okay.
Right? So the
did he inform him that, hey, this is not...
He fucking knew. He's working in this place and he created it. Yeah, he fucking knew.
Well, I mean, but it was obviously inspired by
mm-hmm.
blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. He's very aware. So the dealer invited Greenhalgh to London and shortly afterwards began commissioning copies.
Oh, okay.
Commissioning copies of major pieces of work.
This so reminds me of an episode of Daria. Because... Daria, okay, so, you know, Jane is an artist.
Yes.
Daria is a writer. Well, Jane did a copy of Starry Night.
Oh, I love Starry Night.
And this artist, this guy who said he was an art collector was like, hey, I like that. I want you to work for me making copies.
Oh, God.
And so she's making copies of all of these Van Gogh works and, you know... Brittany's father, Brittany Taylor, the,
mm-hmm.
one, the cheerleader, her father buys one.
Hey, babe.
And somehow Jane goes to their house or whatever. I think she finds out he buys one. She goes to their house and he's like, oh, yeah. She thinks that he believes that it's a real work of Van Gogh.
Original.
Yeah, an original Van Gogh. And so he's like, she's like, oh, you like that, huh? And he's like, yeah, you know, it's pretty good brushwork, you know, he didn't say it's pretty good brushwork. He said, yeah, it's pretty good, right? He's like, yeah, you would never tell it was a copy except for the sloppy brushwork right here. And Jane's like, sloppy brushwork?
She's like, oh, okay.
So then she's like, okay, I'm done making copies for you, for this other guy who was selling these copies.
Because
mm-hmm. he's not selling them as original, he's selling them as copies, but she's under the impression that he's selling them as originals.
Oh.
Anyway, go ahead. Because she thinks that she's that good, like, in her head. Because she's, you know, she's a fucking, like, high school sophomore or something.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
But anyway, go ahead.
She's a copy? Like,
he knows it's a copy.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees the brushwork is kind of a little sloppy. And she's like, it just, like, breaks her spirit or whatever.
Yeah.
Not her spirit, but, like, her ego.
Yeah.
Her ego is put back in check.
Girl, sit down.
Yeah. So.
Sit down. You're not that good.
It would be good if it was your work, but you're doing Van Gogh's work.
Yeah, exactly. Come on now.
So.
Anyway, so the dealer invites Greenhalgh to London, and shortly after, like I said, starts commissioning copies. The man, whom Greenhalgh refers to only as Tom, became like a Fagin-like character in his life. And Fagin from, like, some fucking...
Some fucking British shit.
Like, what is it called? I don't know. He just became like the kind of like he guided him in the like guided him, but kind of in the dark way.
Yeah, he's basically like his little angel, his little devil,
his little devil.
On the conscience side,
yeah,
like his bad conscience or whatever.
So while Greenhalgh created works to order, Tom produced fake provenances from a laboratory. And the provenance is like the fucking paperwork. This is where it came from. This is who bought it. This is why it's legal. It's just like the proof, the documentation, like the certification that says this is like what it is and this is why it's worth what it is and where it came from. So he's creating these fake provenances from a library at an above West End shop. Okay, so the lab was well known to London museums, who would hire to restore acquisitions. So they would hire this laboratory to, like, restore pieces of work from museums and, like, bring it back to restore it to make it look fancy schmancy. But they're also doing fucking bullshit. So as a result, they would know what experts were looking for because they're dealing with the real shit, so they know what experts are actually looking for. And he was there until the late 1980s. So eventually Tom and him had a falling out about some carved tusks, like some elephant tusks, that were quote-unquote stolen in a robbery.
Okay.
But later on, Greenhalgh believes that the dealer sold them.
And didn't give him any money for them?
Pretty much. And then after that, he didn't speak with any of them. So I guess it was like a group of people, but he only like calls out this quote-unquote Tom. Mm. He says, as far as he knows, he retired and immigrated to Portugal and died in 1993.
Died in 1993?
Yeah. The Tom, the art dealer.
Okay.
Who was making the fakes and pretty much teaching him the fucking game.
Okay.
Because this guy teaches him a game. He teaches him what to look for. He teaches him how to create the provenances. He probably connects him with people who to sell it to, where to go. He teaches him the fucking game. He teaches him the game. So after years of being exploited, pretty much, fucking Greenhalgh decides to strike it out on his own. He's like, hey, I've been selling stuff for a living for this motherfucker. And, like, you know, his team, and him not getting paid properly, he was getting paid pence on the fucking money that they were fucking making for the artwork that he was fucking selling. Now he has the ability, and he was kind of mad that he felt like, at the end of the day, when he realizes how much money they were making, how much they were paying him, he was a little bitter and he was a little pissed off about the get down.
Mm.
So, fucking Sean, he's very talented. So he attempted a wide range of crafts, from painting in pastels and watercolors to sketches, sculptures, both modern and ancient, busts and statues, to bas relief and metalwork. He could do fucking anything. Like,
right.
If it's art, he can fucking do it.
Mm-hmm.
He invested in a vast range of different materials, from silver, stone, marble, rare stone, replica metal, and glass.
Replica metal.
Yeah, that's what it's called, replica metal. And then he also did meticulous research on, you know, how to authenticate his items with histories and the provenances. For instance, like, you know, the fake letters from the supposed artist. He knows how to, like, do signatures and forgeries and shit like
right.
that to, you know, demonstrate ownership of the work.
Mm-hmm.
So one of his first independent works was in the olive canvas painting in the style of a Scottish colorist whose paintings commanded a high price at the time. So Greenhalgh says he, you know, put together the provenance, like the backstory about how the piece came into his family through an aunt who was an art dealer in Edinburgh. He decides to take it out on his own, right? He's like, okay, Sean is shy. He's shy. So he doesn't like to talk to people. He just wants to make the art, and he wants it to be sold.
Mm-hmm.
So he decides to ask his family to help him out. So it becomes a family affair. So his fucking dad is like, okay, I'm down. Like, he said his dad was probably, like, bored. Here it is, I'll tell you. So he says, my dad asked if he could, so he asked his dad to help. So on this first piece that he wanted to sell, his dad asks if he could go ahead and take it in. To be sold, because they take it to London and they go and like travel to a different number of art dealers, and like the first dealer was like, hey, I'll give you $5. Here you go. It was probably more than $5, but you know, they're fucking jerking him off and not trying to give him like proper price for whatever.
Right.
And so then the dad was like, let me go in, let me do the fucking talking, let's get this fucking money. So the fucking dad goes in, and his dad was fucking excited about it. His dad was, like, super giddy and eager about it. And he says his dad was probably fucking bored with, like, retirement. And he goes in to talk to a piece, to someone about this piece of work, and he comes out with a check for fucking 20 fucking K.
Oh, wow. Shit, yeah, that would be exciting.
He's like, here's the fucking check. Made that fucking money.
Thanks!
Yeah. And it was called a Pepelo, P-E-P-L-O-E. That was the artist, Pepelo. And he was like, peanuts for a Pepelo. Because he got 20K, but it was worth well more than that if it was an original.
Right.
Which they were trying to sell it as. So, and this happened in 1989. So the day after they sell the Pepelo, Greenhalgh received a call from the Scotland Yard Art Squad. And the dealer who had bought the painting had taken it to an expert who had identified it as a fake.
Okay.
So he was like, hey, Scotland Yard, I don't know what you're talking about. Goodbye. Hangs up. So
the dad.
Sean got a fucking phone call because, you know, he's an artist or whatever. So then he waited for the knock at the door from Scotland Yard, but they never came.
What?
So they were overwhelmed with cases.
Oh, of course. Yeah, basically it's like, oh, well, you got your purse snatched. We're never going to find that fucking shit.
The police never followed up.
Right. Okay.
It's called that due motherfucking diligence or follow-up or whatever.
Well, it's... you know what? So much shit falls through the cracks with the police department. Like, like say you're reporting your bike stolen.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, your bike's stolen. Okay. We'll get on that. And meanwhile, you're never going to see your fucking bike again unless you go on foot and find your bike yourself.
Poor baby.
Like,
vigilante justice.
Come down and make a report so we can waste our time going to your fucking police station making a fucking report for you to never fucking follow up on. Because you ain't looking for my bike.
Vigilante justice!
Vigilante justice.
Yeah, like,
ugh.
Yeah, anyway. Okay.
Speaking of vigilante justice, I was watching The Boys. Have you watched that on Amazon?
Yes. I watched the whole thing. I told you. Oh, okay, no, go ahead.
You didn't tell me. I'm up to episode 3, and I heard it gets, like, really good.
I watched the entire series when I was house-sitting for you in this room, watching that shit.
What did you think?
I watched the whole thing.
It was good, Avi.
Yeah, I was just like, I want more, and of course the season ended. That is Dennis Quaid and Melanie Griffith's, Dennis Quaid and, what's her name? Gums,
Gums?
What's her name? Not Melanie Griffith, the other one. The 90s America sweetheart. What's her name? The blonde chick? She was in, that movie. Oh, his wife.
I can't.
His ex-wife, I mean, What's her name?
What was she in?
What was that movie with Matthew Broderick with her and she goes to France and they're on the train and she's like trying to find...
Oh, Meg Ryan.
Thank you. Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid's son. That's, he's...
Not Lewis. What was his name?
The kid. The kid that works at the Radio Shack.
Yeah, that's their child?
Yes. Doesn't he look just like his dad? He actually kind of reminds me of Dwight Schrute.
Kidding. Meg Ryan and fucking Randy Quaid?
That's their son, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was like, I like this
I love
show.
That you call her Gums.
Because she had, you remember she had those little tiny teeth?
What was his name? They're like, oh, it's okay, petite. I don't think his name is Dennis, but Louis or whatever the fuck his name was. The French guy. After he, like, you know, handles business with Translucent. I was watching it with the
kids. Oh, Frenchie?
Yeah.
Oh, I love him.
Episode 2, he was like, oh, it's okay, petite, you know, whatever his fucking name was. Mm. And, he was just like, I need to go home, I need to go home, I need to go home. And then he had all the fucking Sevens posters in his room and shit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Carl Urban, so that's why. But,
dude, yeah, how can you remember anything with him? He's fucking hot!
But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and he has his accent, too. I'm just like, oh, my God, thank you. Like, I used to, like...
They're calling him English, though, and he doesn't... His accent is not English.
He's from New Zealand, right?
That's where he is from. But they're, like, he's portraying an English person.
Yeah.
But his accent is a New Zealand accent.
Yeah, because nobody can tell the fucking difference.
Right.
It's very...
Yes, you can.
I know, if you pay attention. Exactly, I get it, but, like...
Because you can even tell the difference between an Australian and a New Zealand accent.
You can very well...
If you pay attention.
If you pay attention. But anyway, so the police never fucking followed up. So the family is starting to sell, like, pieces of work as heirlooms. Oh, my aunt had this. Oh, my grandfather got this.
Okay,
oh,
so they're trying to take it to the Antiques Roadshow, but it's like, the Antiques Roadshow, people are like, no.
Well, I mean, they're selling pieces of work.
Right.
So, Sean is now, like, he's going through, like, different art books and creating works of arts that were forgotten and highly sought after.
Okay.
So it made the buyers more likely to buy and believe the story.
Like those fucking wines.
Yeah, because they want to. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're telling them, oh, you know, my great-grandfather got this at a fucking auction from 1872, and it's this from the blah, blah, blah. And they're like, okay, we want it. They want to believe it because he knows what they're looking for.
Right. But if they're buying it, they're not buying it for top dollar. Like, they're not buying it for what it could...
I'll tell you
what
they're buying for. I have to pee so bad. I'm so sorry.
Go ahead and take a break.
Are you single? Are you divorced? Co-parenting? Married to a ghost pirate? Are you in an open relationship with a sword swallower and a jouster at the Ren Fair? Do you loathe dating because you never thought you'd be single again? Do you find yourself mindlessly swiping on dating apps only to stumble into people you already know or already slept with? Well, sit back and relax and grab a cup of coffee and share a laugh or two with us. This is Why I'm Single.
Please look for Why I'm Single wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, don't be a douchebag.
We are back. Alrighty, so... So, family fucking affair. He's got the whole family in the mix, making shit up. It's awesome. Let's make this money.
It's awesome.
Let's make this fucking money.
Yeah.
So, between 1978 and 2006, he created several hundred exquisite forgeries. Some sold to the English royalty. He claims a silver gilt Christ in the 12th century English style is a part of the royal collection.
What?
Others to presidents, a terracotta bust of Thomas Jefferson owned by Bill Clinton, and many more to museums. Greenhalgh's talent was broad. One month, he was an Egyptian granite carver. The next, an impressionistic sculptor. Next, an American watercolorist. He is described as a one-man renaissance by Sunday Times art critic Waldemar Janzonizek.
Okay.
Who actually in 2002 Greenhalgh fooled him with a sculpture of the faun attributed to Ganguin, G-A-U-G-U-I-N, Ganguin, which sold for auction for a reputed $125,000 or £125,000.
Okay.
The pair actually subsequently struck up an unlikely friendship. Like, after all the forgery shit came out,
mm-hmm.
they became buddies.
Mm-hmm.
So Greenhalgh, like, though he's, like, highly praised and his work is just, like, super exquisite, he's just, like, settle the fuck down. I'm just a fucking copycat. He's like, I don't have delusions of grandeur.
He's like, I know that that's not my fucking work.
Yeah. He's like, he says his versatility is a function of what he describes as his low threshold for boredom. He's just,
I get it. So cool. Yeah, he's like, I'm bored. I want to fucking paint some shit. I'm going to paint this because I can't fucking create things on my own, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, he has no vision, as it is.
Yeah, no vision. So he successfully sold his fakes internationally to museums, auction houses, and private buyers, accruing nearly £1 million. It again, like I said, it was a family affair. His parents, George and Olive, would approach the clients. So Olive, the mom, would actually call and make the appointments. She would make the calls for him and make the appointments, and then George, the dad, would actually go out and meet the people and sell them on the story.
Mm.
And then Sean is just making the pieces. They all live at fucking home. They're happy in their home. They never leave the home. And they actually live modestly for the amount of money that they're fucking making.
Right.
They don't want to go anywhere. They're not fucking flashy. They're just like, I'm good. They're just having fucking fun. They're bored in their fucking twilight, pretty much. And their stories seem so credible because Olive's father actually owned an art gallery. Grandma, like, his mother's father owned an art gallery. And her great-grandfather liked to buy items at auctions. So it would make sense that the family may have such precious works of art in their personal collection. So it makes actual sense that they have what they have.
Right.
Or what they're fucking trying to sell. In 1995, the British Museum contacted police after a member of the staff, Leslie Webster, noticed that a collection of items scattered across the museum's various departments had been bought from the Greenhalgh family. A coincidence that for the first time aroused suspicion. They've got all kinds of fucking works of art in the museum bought from the same fucking family. So, Dick Ellis, the police officer who led the art squad between 1989 and 1999, later said that twice the officer in charge of the case was on the verge to making an arrest. So the person in charge of it was like, okay, we're going to go ahead and do this. We're going to go ahead and get them. We're ready. Only to be called away for more pressing issues. So the
okay.
Like, what the fuck? Just go arrest him.
Go get him.
Go fucking get him. What else are you fucking doing? Like, you're not that important. Knock it off.
What the fuck?
What the fuck? What was it? Sasha? Sasha, what?
Sasha,
what the fuck? So, they're fucking dragging their feet, so Greenhalgh is just doing his fucking thing.
Right.
So, another piece, he sold lots of fucking things. He sold things to the Art Institute to Chicago for this piece called The Fawn, the ceramic sculpture on display since 1997 as a work of art from the 19th century French master Paul Gauguin. That's how he became friends with that other guy who gave him that compliment or whatever.
Uh-huh.
The museum purchased the sculpture from a private dealer in London who had bought it at Sotheby's auction in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
So, now this fucking piece right here, this is the piece that he made a lot of fucking money on. It's called the Amarnia Princess. So he created the Amarnia Princess, which is an alabaster torso of an Egyptian princess. He was inspired by from the Louvre in 1999. Well, actually, not 1999. He was inspired by that, like a piece of work that he saw at the Louvre.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1999, he created it, but he couldn't get a good price for it. So he sat it on the cupboard for fucking 2 years until dear old dad showed it to Angela Thomas, the Bolton Museum's Egyptian curator.
Okay.
So he said that he had bought the Amarnia Princess in the 1980s at a sale in Somerset. And again, there's always elaborate stories behind the fucking piece.
Right.
And they fooled 6 or 7 experts on that piece of fucking work.
Wow.
In 2003, after consulting experts at the British Museum and Christie's, the Bolton Museum bought the Amarnia Princess for £440,000.
Wow.
And it remained on display until February 2006. So, he felt bad about this piece. So it was a success that weighed heavily. It was a success that weighed heavily on Greenhalgh's conscience.
Why?
Most of the money went left untouched, but he felt bad because he loved that museum.
He loved the museum.
He loved the museum, and he loved the Egyptian art exhibit for what it was.
Okay.
So he felt like shit because he sold them this piece, and most of the money came from donations.
The money to buy the piece.
Yes. And, like, he just highly respected that museum. He learned a lot from that museum.
Okay.
So, a reported £370,000, of which was public money, was drawn from a heritage memorial fund to get that fucking piece of work for $440,000. Someone was like, you know, what you have to appreciate about this piece is that the quality of the carvings and perhaps trying to understand, you know, that it was an actual masterpiece. This is what Angela Thomas is saying, the creator in 2003. She sees it, she's
the curator.
Yeah, curator. Is that not what I'm saying?
He's a creator.
The curator. She's like, we just have to have this piece, oh my God.
Because it's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
like this wonderful fucking piece.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
The funny thing is, Greenhalgh said in every fucking piece of work that he did, he gave it a tell. Like,
that it was fake. Okay.
Every piece. He gave a tell.
Mm-hmm.
And they just didn't see it. They weren't paying attention. They were ignoring it. But he said he gave every fucking piece of work that he did a tell.
Uh-huh. I can see, like, how, yeah, why he would do that.
Right? Cover his ass a tiny bit.
Be like, hey, look, if you really want to see if it's a fucking fake forgery, you
yep.
can tell by this particular thing.
Yep.
Okay.
So for all the money that he made from forgeries, Greenhalgh claims to have led a modest lifestyle. He said he just ate well, he had good clothes, and most of the money went to travel.
Right. I would travel too.
He led a modest lifestyle. I ate well, I had good clothes. Most of it went to travel. I've been to most places, he says, but like flashy houses and cars, that's not anything that's ever appealed to him.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, we love my parents' house, and my mom and my dad, they didn't want to leave. So they wanted to stay, you know, where they live. They're just like, you know, where the fuck are we going to fucking go? Like,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So.
I gets it.
He purchased the catalog from 1892 and produced some works of art from that catalog. And like I was saying before, Greenhouse says he always put a tell in his forgeries. A fault that should, to a trained eye, give the game away.
Right.
The police said he was taking a piss. The police said I was taking a piss, but it wasn't my intention. I was testing them, I suppose. I started putting more and more faults in it. No matter how many mistakes, they were always blown away by the fucking story behind it, the provenance. Like, they hardly even looked at the work. So the fucking story, that paperwork that they're selling that he learned how to create, they're like, holy shit, this is fucking amazing. I don't care if it looks like fucking Chewbacca. I know it's from 1982. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, open your fucking eye, you fucking... They're frauds, too. They don't fucking get it.
Yeah. You know what, though? A lot of people... I don't want to say a lot of people, but some people in who, like, in the art game...
Yeah.
Even, like, in the art game... In the jewelry game, as we learned already, in the wine game.
In the wine game, yeah.
In certain
circles yeah.
are fucking frauds. They
yeah.
want to fucking be more important than they actually are.
Yeah.
So they embellish their credentials. They make up fucking shit.
For
they
sure.
pretend to know things they don't know. And it bites them in the ass.
Yeah. Well, let's get biting. So, Greenhalgh's next project, a trio of Assyrian reliefs offered to the British Museum, was the work that finally gave him away. He claimed that the artifacts had been bought by his grandfather at auction in 1892. It was a work he now eagerly pours scorn on, criticizing the proportions and style and finish. It was shite, pretty much. It was shite. Like, you know, he did the fucking work, and he was just like, tell. He didn't fucking care. He was sick of it. So the errors were not unintentional. He did these intentionally. So I wonder if some subconsciously wanted me to be caught, to put an end to it. Fucking Madoff. He just wants it over.
Yeah.
I was sick of it all, but I knew that I couldn't end it himself. Like, I couldn't end it myself. So he knew that he wasn't going to fucking end it. Someone had to end it.
Yeah.
And it was these fucking pieces that he fucking did.
He's like, all right, fuck this. I'm tired. So, we're just going to fuck up all this shit and hope they catch it.
Hope they fucking catch it.
Yeah.
Because Scotland Yard has all this fucking, like, paperwork on him, and they've yet to kick down the fucking door. So, they get a fucking hair up their butt. They begin contacting auction houses, museums. They heard issues of forgeries and complaints. This piece of work that is not, you know, up to par finally happens, so his home gets raided. So, in Sean Greenhalgh's words, they fucking disrespected his home and he was pissed.
What?
Okay. So, when his home was raided, the officials...
But he lives with his parents.
He lives with his parents.
Okay.
They fucking rolled through, and apparently he had, like, a toy gun. Like, from his nephew or something, there was a toy gun at the house, which was clearly a toy gun. And then I think there was another weapon in the house, but it was, like, it wasn't...
It was a knife?
It's a knife! This is a knife. It was unloaded, and it was just, like, clearly, like, this is a weapon, and it's where it's supposed to be, or whatever.
Like, it was secured, and like...
They come through the house, they're knocking down doors, they're throwing people down... They're just tearing shit up, and he's fucking pissed. And he was like, if they would have fucking come in all civilized, like, hey, let's have a conversation, it would have been a different situation, but they didn't. They came in like the fucking SWAT.
Right. Like he was a fucking gun runner or like a
yes.
fucking cartel member
yes.
or something.
Yes, yes, yes. So,
instead of a forger, which is not the same.
It's not the same thing. So
okay.
he's mad. Like, you know, I'll talk about how they come to the house and what they find. But they come to the house, and he sits, and he doesn't say fucking shit to them for 33 hours because he's mad. Because
they fucked the way they came
the
in.
The way they came to the house,
right.
And they didn't speak to him.
They didn't speak to him.
They were just like, get down on the ground, fucking, get down the fucking ground.
Yeah.
Get down.
They didn't fucking,
yeah.
They didn't do the due process or whatever.
Right, exactly. And so, like, he was like, he would have named names, he would have said what was going on, but he didn't say shit.
Name names? What names? It's his dad and his mom.
But the people that he learned this stuff from, the people that
okay.
he's selling to, the people
okay.
who know it's forgeries. It's not just...
Right, okay. Because, yeah, there's people that know their forgeries and they're trying to sell them as fucking...
Exactly. But he didn't name names because he's mad at them because they're fucking assholes.
So when the police raided the house, there was evidence all over the place. Works of arts that were sold, materials to create the pieces of work, blocks of stone, furnace melting silver on top of a fridge, half-finished rejected sculptures, watercolors under the bed, checks for $20,000 dated from 1993, a bust of an American president sitting in the loft. And the people that came through, they're like, I've never seen anything like this before. It's insane.
Because he's an art forger.
He's
not a fucking, like a, you know, some
gun runner. Some,
yeah, like some hardened criminal. He's a fucking art. He's an artist.
Yeah.
All he's doing is fucking creating.
Fucking Rudy was
works
like,
out of
Rudy K's like, hey guys, what's up? You want some wine? Hey guys, you guys are knocking at the door. How's it going?
Right? Like, that's what it's so funny, like, the way the police, they handle everybody the same. So, regardless of whether you've murdered 75 people, or if you've created one fake work of art and you got caught.
Yeah.
Like, they treat you like
the fucking same.
Like, you're a piece of dirt.
Hey, I'm different!
Because the police feel like they're better than people. But guess what, motherfucker? You are working an hourly fucking job like everyone else. And you're just pissed off because you weren't smart enough to get away with the shit that these people got away with at the time.
Oops.
I feel like that. I feel like the police, you can't, it's a difference between I killed some kids, you know, and I fucking forged a Degas. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it's
yeah.
different.
Yeah.
They're different people. It's a different mindset. It's a different class of person.
For sure.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, if I went and, like...
Like, I'll put some pictures up, but he looks like... Like, he looks like he can be a rock and roller. Like he looks like he's, like, he can fuck you up. He really does.
But, I mean, I don't know. I feel like the police, like, the way they handle people is not... It's not okay.
Yeah.
It's not okay.
It's not.
It's not. And they need to fucking... Well, you know, they're criminals, they're this or that. No, first of all, you're innocent until proven guilty.
True.
Except for in this fucking country. You're innocent until proven guilty, number one. Number two, regardless, human rights are human rights. You don't become less than human just because you committed a crime.
Oh, yeah.
And number three, go fuck yourself because you could easily be in my position.
You're probably in my position, you fucking crook.
Okay, because half the cops are fucking crooked anyway. But whatever. Go ahead.
You like to flip people off when you're drinking.
I'm just saying, don't be a dick. Like, you could easily, we could switch places. Somebody could frame you. You could be fucking framed,
mm-hmm.
and then you could be getting kicked in the fucking ribs.
Like Judge Dredd.
By your fucking friends because you were framed. You didn't do shit, but you're fucking framed. Now, how do you feel?
How do you feel, you fucking criminal?
You're a criminal that you didn't do anything, but you're now a fucking criminal in your fucking friend's eyes. Don't be an asshole. That's what I don't like. Like, you know, police, great. You're there to protect and serve, but half the time they're not. They're there on their own power, fucking power trips. They think they're better than everybody else.
Whoa.
They fucking, don't get me started with cops.
Yeah. So, Sean Greenelsh was arrested on March 15, 2006, and he was sentenced to 4 years and 8 months in prison. He was also ordered to pay £400 back to Sotheby's and museums. And they feel like they've only found, like, a third of the pieces of art that he created.
A third?
A third.
They all have tells, so go find the tells.
Go find the tells, you fucking real people. Do your fucking, like, he knew the work. He went out to the places, he saw the work, and that's how you become a critic or an expert, going out and culturing yourself and seeing these works of art and actually seeing it and, like, not memorizing it, but knowing it and saying, what the fuck is this? Is this supposed to be here? I saw it at this particular museum. This is not factual.
Yeah.
So they offered him an opportunity to get out of jail quick. You know, oh, you can do half the time. You can do this. You can do that. And he was like, I did the fucking time. I did the crime. I'm going to fucking pay the time. Do the time.
Mm-hmm.
I did the crime. I'm going to do the time.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck off. I'm doing my 4 years and 8 months. See you later.
Were they trying to get him to, like, do something else?
Like, yeah, to, like, get out early or whatever. And he was like, fuck off.
Fuck you guys.
Fuck you guys.
You're not going to screw me.
I'm doing my time. And so, like, they tried to sentence his parents.
They tried.
Yeah. So they were going to give him like 12 months for their involvement in the whole scheme of
these
it all.
Old people who fucking basically have like 4 years left to live.
Okay, fucking assholes. The parents never got time. He was like, don't fuck with my fucking parents, dick lickers. And so they didn't fuck with the parents. So, there's one piece of art that I want to tell you guys about that, that he did, and he's like, this is a fucking forgery, and I fucking know it. And it was a piece from,
he's like, ha-ha.
Ha-ha, you dumb fucks. Anyway, he's out of jail. He did his time. He got out in, 2011. So, a picture Greenhalgh created when he was 18 years old sold for $22,000 as an original piece of work from Leonardo da Vinci.
Oh, okay.
So, this piece of work, he practiced it. So, after practicing the drawing on cartridge paper, he mounted the volume on, he mounted the piece of work.
Cartridge paper?
Yeah, I don't know, cartridge paper, which is probably like printer paper, I probably imagine.
Okay.
Or whatever the fuck they use, what Da Vinci would probably be using, I don't know.
Well, they used parchment back then.
This is cartridge paper.
Okay.
He mounted it on a vellum, on an oak...
Vellum.
A vellum, mm-hmm. on an oak board from an old Victorian school desk lid, which he stole from the storeroom of Bolton Industrial Tech, where his father, George, worked as a cleaner.
He stole paper.
He's a savage.
Okay.
He had used three colors, black, white, and red. He used gum Arabic gum Arabic earth pigments that he then went over with oak gall ink. Leonardo was left-handed, so he feared that a betrayal of his own dominant right hand, for fearing of
right.
the, you know, whatever,
I get it. Mm-hmm.
He turned the fucking painting clockwise and hatched strokes from the profile outwards, suggesting that the work of a left-handed artist. So,
right.
like, he turned it, like when I'm left-handed, by the way. Sonny is left-handed. Brandy is a damn dirty righty.
Oh, okay.
I'm just kidding.
Well.
Well, then.
Thank you for telling me you feel that way.
That's how I fucking feel. No, I turn my
you
shit.
You know they used to make left-handed kids fucking
right-handed.
Right-handed.
Yeah. I turn my paper clockwise to about 3 o'clock when I write.
Damn.
Yeah, I turn it to about 3 o'clock. Just myself. Anyway, so he turned it just to make sure that it looked like it was coming from a lefty.
Weirdo.
Yeah, I know. When he finished it, he took the picture to an art dealer in Arrowgate, where he offered it for sale. Not as a forgery, but as a homage.
Homage. Okay.
But as a homage. The dealer disparaged it, the quality of it. He was like, oh, this is shite, this is garbage, and paid him £80 for it. Which barely covered the materials that he used to fucking create it,
uh-huh.
let alone the labor. But he took the fucking money 2 decades later at a New York auction. That fucking painting sold for $22,000. The end.
Okay.
No, but like when he was out of jail, like, so I, this article that I did from, or the article that I found from, The Guardian was from 2017. So he was talking about the piece of work and people were like, oh, this is real, this is real. He's like, no, it's not, it's fucking fake. I fucking did it. It's not real.
Nah.
And he says there's a lot of pieces of work out there that he can look at it and like, nah, mm-mm, that's not real. He should become an art fucking critic or someone to, like, you know, verify.
Yeah, a critic. An appraiser.
An appraiser. Sorry, an appraiser.
You know what critics are, right? Critics are assholes who didn't fucking learn how to do the fucking job that they want to do, so instead they go around criticizing what they want the job. So, like, food critics, they're not fucking chefs.
Ooh.
They're assholes that go around eating food for free, trying to freaking get in the good graces of chefs.
Ooh.
And movie critics are assholes who never made a fucking movie in their life,
ooh.
But they're out there fucking critiquing movies.
Well, become a movie...
So, Siskel and Ebert, we're both
dead.
Dead.
Are they both dead?
They're both dead. I'm just saying, make a fucking movie before you start critiquing shit.
Burn.
I wrote 3 books, but I don't go around critiquing books, assholes.
Woo! Brain's on fire.
Anyway, go ahead.
So that is the story of Sean Greenhalgh. So, he is out of jail. He is still making art, but again, he says he has no voice. And he's just like, everything I do is like a fucking mockery.
If he gets a naked chick in front of him, in front of his fucking easel and his paints, and he just like gets a naked chick, I guarantee you he'll get some fucking...
Look at...
He'll get some fucking inspiration.
He's a muse. That's what he fucking needs.
Yes,
he needs a muse.
He does.
He needs a muse. So some fucking museum in the UK fucking bought and like sponsored a studio for him.
Oh.
So he's able to like get his work done. He has a fucking studio, but he still has to fucking work because he's on like parole and shit. And he works for a fucking bakery.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what he's doing now, but that's what was going down in 2017. So, and his parents passed away, too.
Both of them? Did,
yeah.
Like, around the same time?
Like, I think it was, like, 2 years apart they passed.
Aw.
So, he's lost his parents. So, hopefully, you know, he can find his voice. He does need a muse. I think that's exactly what he needs, is a muse. Who wants to be his naked chick? I'll do it.
His naked chick.
Come and fly me out. I'll come be your naked chick. I'm okay with nudity. So, that was Sean Grielsch. So, yay.
It's 1:30.
Oh, I have a softball game to go to.
You have an illness.
I have an illness, and if I want me to be 100%, I need to rest.
I was listening to a podcast called, it was one of the, I think they're a part of the Lady Pod Squad. I think it's one that you listened to, actually.
Which one?
Non-Mom Happy Hour.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And which one's the older one? Kelly?
Nerdzilla?
Debbie Jo. No, it was Debbie Jo. Debbie Jo was like, what the fuck is Frat Horrock?
What?
And I was like, no! So, yeah, because they're, you know, they're 10 years apart, 27 and 37.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, my God, we need to get this girl some help. She doesn't know what fucking Frat Horrock is.
Oh, my goodness. Debbie Jo!
And so then I was like, dum, 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 dum. And, but here's the thing. HBO bought Frat Horrock.
Yeah,
so they're putting out new episodes
and
of Frat
Horrock. And it's on Amazon, too.
So she could easily find Frat Horrock and watch it.
That's if you want to watch Frat Horrock.
Debbie Jo, if you ever listen to this podcast,
watch Frat Horrock, girl.
Put on the Frat Horrocks and enjoy the happiness that is fucking Frat Horrock.
The theme is good, but that shit's definitely 80s shit. And we watch
no,
it as
no, 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 no. Frat Horrock is timeless.
Timeless.
It's timeless.
Ageless.
And they're doing new episodes of Fraggle Rock. So,
oh, I didn't know they were doing new episodes of Fraggle Rock.
HBO bought Fraggle Rock.
Okay, got it.
So there are new episodes.
Oh, shit.
Fraggle, there are new Fraggle Rocks.
I think I'm drunk.
Debbie Jo, watch the Fraggle Rock.
She's a non-mon happy hour.
And Kelly
Jo, Nerdzilla.
I hope you heal from your surgeries.
Oh, yeah, she did have surgery.
She had surgery.
Well wishes, darling.
Yeah.
All right. So that was Sean Grielsch. Let me know if I ruined any of the accents. Guess what? We get a fucking... Our number two place where that's been streaming our episodes is motherfucking London, England. So, hey. Hello. Thank you so much.
Oh, my God. I'm pretty sure they don't like that.
Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Ignore my accent.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you all for listening. I don't care where the fuck you are. If you're listening,
exactly.
Thank you so much. And we really appreciate you.
Yeah.
And keep listening. Tell your friends about us. We want to be friends.
I don't, but that's cool.
I do. Let's be buddies. So, check us out online if you have not yet. We are on Twitter at Book of Lies Pod.
The Twitties.
The 2020-20s. And I'll be 2020 tweeting you, so holler at a player.
Mm.
Check us out on Insta, Book of Lies Podcast.
Pod Kizzle for Shizzle.
For Kizzle for Shizzle. We're on Facebook at Book of Lies Pod. Like us, hang out with us, and maybe we'll make a community out of it. It's just a page right now, but holler. We're on there. And check us out on www.bookoflifespodcast.com.
Yeah.
You can listen to past episodes. You can find your streaming platform. And if your platform is not available, hit me up. Send us an email at bookoflifespodcast.com. Sorry. bookoflifespodcast@gmail.com. And let us know where you're not finding us at, and we'll make sure we get there for you, okay?
Also, I want to start telling your guys' stories. So, if you have ever been defrauded or scammed or cheated or whatever
or
by some asshole.
To. Even yeah. lied to.
Give it to us. Let us know. Send us an email. I'll tell your story. We'll tell your story.
Dude.
And we'll make other people aware of the dicks the fucking scammers, the fraudsters that decided to prey on you.
Dude, check this out. Okay, so my husband...
We'll give you vengeance in sort of a way.
Vengeance is mine!
Said the Lord.
So my husband is, he's a sensitive type. And he sent me our fucking pictures from the photographer from our wedding last night at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
His friend? His cousin? What was that?
Dan. Yes, Seven. He's who did our photography for our wedding. And I saw pictures I had not seen. So this morning I'm looking at them. And I was like, And then I was like, okay, so Rupa and Crystal had on their, you know, beach sandals or whatever.
And we had Ashley had on shoes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to tell you about some fucking shit that I think I got frauded on. So the day of my wedding, I was stressed out. Remember, we talked about my hemorrhoid that I got the next day. Part of that coming from, it was supposed to be a beach wedding. So
and it rained that day.
It rained that day. So the morning of my wedding, I get a call from the wedding planner who was supposed to execute the beach wedding for us. And she's like, oh, my God, I can't do this. You know, it's wet. We're trying to dig these holes.
She said, I can't do this.
She was like, we can't. It's too wet. It's too wet. We can't dig these holes.
I still want to know who wants to have a fucking beach wedding in October.
My husband, who's from the Bahamas.
Who's from the fucking Bahamas. You've seen a beach all your life.
Anyway, don't hate on my man. So she's like, we can't do this, blah, 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 blah. And I had already paid this woman for everything. For everything. Like, for everything. For the fucking ceremony. For the fucking, the camisoles that I was going to have. Not camisoles. What are those little parasols?
Mm-hmm.
The parasols that people are going to be able to have access to for everything. It was like almost
$2,000. Wait, everybody's supposed to have parasols?
Well, you should be able to have a parasol if the sun was in your face or something. To hold a parasol so, you know, you could wash the wind.
We never saw those, but anyway, go ahead.
It was supposed to be on the fucking beach.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think I paid like $2,000 for this. And she never gave me a refund. She never said, here's some money, here's this, here's that, or whatever. She was like, we can't do it, and I never fucking heard from this bitch. After the wedding, nothing. And I honestly feel like her get down was like, oh, I hope the beach wedding doesn't work. I'm going to take all the money and not give you any portion back. I think she had, like, a clause or something in, like, the contract or whatever. Like, if it was, like, I don't fucking know. Like, it's a beach. Like,
Did you read the contract?
Brandy, I did. I think I even had Ashley take a look at it. And it was, like, bullshit. Because I gave her, like, half up front to, like, secure it. And then before the wedding, I had to pay, like, a week or two before the wedding. I had to give the rest of the money.
Right. That's how it works.
But I think I even asked for some money back. I was like, you didn't give us anything. Like, you canceled it. We couldn't have the fucking wedding or the ceremony. You didn't fucking marry us.
They're like, it's probably like a weather clause. Like,
yeah.
Weather is an act of God, and you cannot get...
Yeah, I honestly feel like I should have gotten some type of money back, and I'm not going to put this business name out there, but if this has happened to you... And you feel like you were frauded, please let me know, because I would like to get some fucking repercussions. I want some money. Who's fucking calling me? It's Kendall. Oh, it's Kendall. Okay.
Reparations!
Something, like, if that's possible, or whatever. Like, I feel like she could have given me some money back, because she didn't have to put all this stuff out. She was like, well, I've rented all this stuff, and I did this, and I did that. But
it never got used.
It never happened.
Right.
So, like, I feel like I should have got something back. So that was my wedding day. It gave me a huge hemorrhoid from all the stress and the crying in the morning, but we ended up having an amazing wedding, and I think I might share a picture or two from the wedding, because it was wonderful. I looked at you, I saw you, like, looking at yolks when we were coming down the thing, and you're like, you can tell you're looking at them, like,
What, during the, during
when you
the,
were, like, when you guys were walking out, you guys, like, walking together, like, he's taking the pictures of him, he's taking pictures of you, and, like, you guys walk together, and you're smiling when you guys are walking together, but when you're walking out, you're like, you're, like, looking at it, like, you're smiling, but you're, like, ill. Because he had on sunglasses inside. Like a dick.
He's not a person. I'm just like...
Well, fortunately, we're going to fucking Hawaii for our anniversary this year.
In October.
So, maybe it'll make up for it. Anyway, so...
How will that make up for him?
No, it makes for up. We never made it to, like, the beach.
We still haven't had an anniversary. Like,
girl.
I mean, a honeymoon, so whatever.
Well, I'm making ours happen.
When I marry my second or third husband, then we'll have one. But
okay.
Long, yeah.
Well, I'm just saying. So if anything like that has ever happened to you, please let me know if I'm able to get money back. I want money. Anything else?
No. But stay tuned because book three of the Withdrawal series will be out. And it's going to be fabulous because this is going to be the ultimate, like, this is the ending. So some shit has to happen, right?
Some shit
has to create some shit to happen. I just have to fucking, like, tap into my inner dirty side and fucking
get that dirty side out. Well, check us out on Patreon. Become a patron. Get that signed copy of that book from Brandy.
Yeah.
We'll send it out to you.
I'm like, I have one. That's why there's one signed copy.
Mom's calling us now. Hang on. Hello?
Hello.
Nope.
I'm not coming. I don't think I'm going to go to the game because I'm still a little congested.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, but I didn't say a word. Okay.
I'm still congested. I texted them. I was just like, I'm still kind of sick, and I don't think I should be running around the field in dust and, you know, whatever. So I'm not
here with the wind blowing.
Yeah, no.
Okay,
well, you're on the podcast, Mom. Say hi.
Oh, hi.
Bye. Foot there.
All right, bye.
That looks really crusty.
See us on Patreon. It's cool. Visit us on Patreon. Become a Patreon. Become our Bottomless Mimosa patron. And get some more swag. I got some of those stickers. And I got a little plunger from the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Day thing.
Plungers.
Yeah, because season two, old girl's carrying that plunger around the fucking...
In France?
Not in France, but season
two. They went to France. I didn't watch the whole season two.
Season two, they're at the fucking Jewish, like, summer camp. Pretty much Jewish super camp, and she's carrying around a plunger, pretending like she works for the thing.
Well,
her agent.
I'm telling you what I
they
saw
haven't
on
France
season
yet.
Two was when they went to France.
Oh, the mom.
And yeah,
see
to get
mom.
Their mom. And that was all I saw.
Oh.
I didn't see the whole
episode.
Oh,
you gotta watch the whole season. It's pretty good. So, anyway, join us at that level, and the more swag that Brandy was talking about, you'll get some more of that swag. I got stickers, I got magnets, and I'm giving away that fancy schmancy plunger to our Bottomless Mimosa patron. The first one, and you'll also get a copy of Brandy's book, which is signed.
If you're the first patron to sign up at the Bottomless Mimosa level, you will get all kinds of shit. And then you can fucking wave it in people's faces.
Say hi, bitch. Look what I got, dumb hoe.
It's not available anymore.
Yep, nope, it's not. So check us out. Become a patron anyway. Support us. Help us out. Help us run this podcast. Help us offset some of these costs. Because, hey, it ain't cheap, man.
Okay, it costs money to run a podcast.
It really does. Believe
it's not free.
We've been doing this for 6 months, Brandy.
Has it been 6 months?
It's been 6 months.
Oh, my God.
And we are still in this game, and we are not motherfucking slowing down, okay? We're just getting it on. So hit us up. We love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, you're the fucking champion of the world. And thank you so much. So we love you guys.
Thank you, Freddie Mercury.
Freddie Mercury. We are the champions.
Yeah. Okay, that's enough.
My friends.
Okay, cool. Thanks so much. Thanks.
I am Sunny Hepburn.
And I'm Brandy Fleet.
And we'll keep on fighting.
I wish, I really wish that you had perfect pitch. But anyway,
I wish I did too.
This has been Book of Lies.
Yay! Bye. Have a great week.
You forgot to play the podcast.
The podcast.
Oh my God.
This
Help.
Is the podcast.
Oh my God.
No time for losers.
Oh my God.
'Cause this is the book of life podcast.